F is for flying food. I'm a small, skinny person, but to my shame, I've got a large carbon footprint because I fly a lot. At least twice a week, I'm 35,000 feet up in the air, and often as not, waiting with considerable apprehension for an airline meal to be served, although I use the term serve advisedly. Mind you, I'm in the last group to get the meal. Why? Because I'm part of the small minority of passengers who hasn't ordered a special meal. In the 70s, a plummy-voiced stewardess would announce on the PA, "Would all those who order the special meal press their call button?" Three women would comply, likely two of them thin-faced vegetarians and one a chubby diabetic. If a male had responded, then his sexuality would have been immediately questioned. There would have been surreptitious glances and the consensual view, certainly from male passengers, that he was limp-wristed. Now call lights sparkle like the Blackpool Illuminations or Las Vegas as allergy-prone passengers compete with religious minorities to be first served with special meals. I have an early recollection of flying with Guyana Airways when a plastic tray was plopped in front of me with a grey, quivering, amorphous mass as the centrepiece. "What is it?" I asked, and back came the soft, conspiratorial, sing-song Caribbean refrain, "We think it's chicken." I recall a hilarious flight between Minneapolis, St. Paul and L.A. with Northwest Airlines. I thought we might be in for something a little different when I noticed a tall, stringy air steward with bulgy eyes roundly abusing his passengers to find their seats in double-quick time. When in the air, a hapless but kindly grandmother sitting near me spilt her once-in-a-year sweet sherry on her tray. He was on to her like a shot with a censorious, "No more booze for you, dearie." Later, our man was given the announcement for the upcoming meal. "Shortly, we'll be pleased to serve you lunch, and you have a choice of chicken with pasta salad or salmon with mixed vegetables." Slight pause, then he added, "Well, actually 60% of you will be getting chicken and 40% salmon." Further pause, and then, "I wouldn't worry which one you get, because they both taste the same." Does airline food get a bad press? Well, yes, and generally for good reason. I have in mind a brilliant cartoon by Jim Unger. His anti-hero Herman is being interviewed at an airport by a market researcher clasping a clipboard. "We're conducting a survey into no-frill airfares. How would you feel about not having any meals served on board for the duration of the flight, in terms of hard cash?" Herman ponders this question and responds, "If they didn't serve food, I'd pay an extra $50. Food features in my Hughes's International Laws of Travel at number 3. Namely, the best part of an airline meal is the menu. You know what I mean. If you read it through quickly, it sounds like a delicious Epicurean treat is in store. But it's not. Incidentally, by the by, rule 1 is if there's a problem in flight delays, etc., it can only get worse. Nobody ever tells you, "Oh, everything's got better and we're leaving earlier than we thought." Rule 2 is get yourself as near the front of the plane as possible. This is code for travel business of first class, if you can find someone to pay the astonishingly high price premiums for doing so. Rule 7 comes into play when you're on the ground. Never, ever use anything from the hotel minibar. Why? The price of the Coke will exceed the cost of the hotel room. I can offer some practical in-flight advice when choosing from the menu. Select the main course that airline microwaving can do the least harm to. So anything stir-fried? No. Remember, Chinese food is at its best when it is cooked at very high temperatures and consumed immediately, not reheated several days later. Curries and stews are a better bet. They may even improve with reheating. But to be honest, the main course is always likely to be iffy. If the airline was up front, it would eschew a menu as such and have a little card advising us, "Look, for the US $3 budget we have for this meal, the main course is likely to be inedible, but we'll do our best by not messing with the starter and dessert. And here's the bonus, on international flights we'll deluge you with booze to help you forget the whole experience." Allowed me a side excursion where I can link flying and fish. Specifically, if I can pronounce it, Exocitidae, which is the posh Latin name for flying fish. These fish use their large pectoral fins to glide 50 metres or more to escape predators. They're the national fish of Barbados, where I lived and worked for 5 years. Me and my business partner Jerry used to scoot down to the Boatyard Cafe for lunch, and invariably we had flying fish on a salt bun with lashings of Scotch Bonnet hot pepper sauce. This sauce is so hot that it can render you speechless, and all you can manage is soft mewling noises. Jerry, no wimp when it came to spicy foods, would turn bright red and a pool of perspiration would form around his feet as he munched lunch. If you fancy trying flying fish, buy it filleted. In my day, the fishwives of Oystins in Barbados could prepare one in 20 seconds flat. It'd take you half an hour and the result would be a terrible bloody mess. Begging your indulgence further, I was in beautiful Barbados for 5 years. As I said, it's a tiny 30 kilometres by 20 kilometres island and home to 290,000 Bajans who entertain more than 1 million tourists each year. For a short period, I lived just outside the main town, Bridgetown, in an apartment above a Say When run bar. Rum bar, that is. To explain, rum was $1 a glass, and the barman kept pouring until you told him to cease. I'd wait too long before saying stop, I'm afraid, and invariably regretted it. I took the naive view in the morning that if I lowered my head into my shoulders, somehow the hangover pain would hover above rather than in my head. Ho-hum. Anyway, here's the link with flying fish. Bruce, the owner of the Say When bar, developed this sideline in kaluas. You know, the Hawaiian cooking method of digging a pit in the sand, heating rocks, placing the food on leaves on the rocks, covering the food with more leaves and piling sand over the top, and returning hours later for a delicious meal of baked fish and breadfruit. Bruce would bring in a busload of tourists and give them an evening to remember. Although most forgot, as an essential element of the evening was lashings of rum punch, which ensured you were legless well before the food was served. Anyway, this particular evening, Bruce had underestimated the number of folk on the bus. I was returning from work and he took me aside and asked if I would race down to the nearby fried fish and chicken shop and buy some supplementary foodstuffs. Won't they notice that it's KFC and not authentic baked Hawaiian kalua cuisine, said I naively. Nah, they'll be too far gone to notice, said Bruce. Of course he was correct. Picture the Caribbean scene, 20-plus inebriated souls linking arms and singing the Harry Belafonte classic, Beautiful, beautiful Barbados, gem of the Caribbean Sea, while dining on fried chicken and flying fish, surrounded by a circle of candles flickering in the moonlight. Breathtaking. Later, I asked Bruce, how do you keep the candles from blowing out? They look so lovely in the moonlight. It's easy, David, but not a word to the punters. They're tampons soaked in coconut oil and will keep alight for hours. Somehow, this served to take the rosy glow off the romantic scene. Onwards.